There are two words, if I was arbitrary like Ted Wilson wants to be, if you've been following that catastrophe, that I would love for Seventh-day Adventists to take out of their vocabulary. And that is justification and sanctification. I think they ought to just take those words out. We've spent literally 100 years trying to figure those two words out, and we get stumbled on them, and who cares? Now, when I was pastoring in Oklahoma, there was a young couple that had a baby, and they wanted me to go down and see the baby with them. And this was to be the first time the father had seen the baby. And so I went down with them, and I went with the father, and the mother was there, and they brought the little baby out, and of course the mother was just cooing over it. And the dad said something that was absolutely wise. He said, "Let's not get too excited. We have no idea how this son is going to turn out. So why are we excited? He might be a serial rapist. Or he could be a great evangelist. He might be an axe murderer. So instead of being overly happy right now, let's wait and see how his life progresses. And then at the end of his life, or when he's so settled into his life, then we'll make a decision if we're really happy that we have a son or not." Now, what do you think of that? Huh?
Sounds logical to me.
That's why you always ask a question. You never know. Seems logical to her, she says. Yeah. What do you think of that? How many of y'all did that with your kids or your grandkids? Then why do we have God doing exactly that in our lives? Because if you want to get into justification and sanctification, that's exactly, if you're not careful, where you get pinned in. Oh, it's so nice. We just had a son. Well, let's see what happens to him before we decide how much we really love him. Well, we would say somebody outside of Catherine would say that person is nuts. So we got We have 432 people here today in this class that think is nuts, and we got one person here today that thinks maybe it's logical. We want people to struggle for their salvation. We really do. We want them to give up something. We want them to sacrifice something. We want them to do without. We want them to prove that they're worthy. And we want them to march to a tune that we think all Seventh-day Adventists need to march to. But yet we'll come along and we'll say the right words. And this is exactly what Paul is facing in the book of Romans. A whole bunch of Jews who knew the Old Testament forward, backwards, upside down. And every time the gospel came along, they would say, "Yeah, that's great, but you gotta perform." And so the question is, which I think is a fair question, is What is God looking for in our lives? What is He judging us on? What is He looking for in our performance? So Paul comes along and tries to answer that by using the lives of two people who happen to be in the Old Testament. Now somebody, my designated reader, hurt his neck snow skiing for the Olympic trials. Well, that's a good story, isn't it?
That was after the skydiving.
After the skydiving, yeah. See, so my designated reader is a little impaired today. So I need someone to look up Genesis 15:6 and hold it. Then I need somebody else to look up 1 Kings 14:8 and hold it. So Paul is writing to a bunch of Jews, hardcore, well, let's use the word hardcore Seventh-day Adventists, whose biggest thing was, if you're going to accept Christ, good morning. How are you? Have you been in our class before?
No, happy Sabbath.
Happy, what is your name?
Vanessa.
Vanessa, these are sometimes about 7/8 of them are nice people. You get $1 for just showing up.
Wow.
We're glad to have you.
Thank you.
You bet. Have a seat. Yeah, wait, either way, one more seat in the back or maybe one seat over here on the side. So he's writing to a bunch of people who said, if you're a follower of Christ, if you accept Christ, if you do these things, you must be circumcised. Or else you're not a Christian. Now, we don't say that today. What do we say?
You have to quit smoking.
Quit smoking? What else do we say?
Keep the right day.
God keeps the right day. Pardon? Yeah, see? We don't say you need to be circumcised. Nuts. But, here's what you do need. And Paul is trying to get across to a body of believers what I think is probably the most important lesson our church can get across. Is God is not looking for performance. Now, before we get out of class, I hope that I pull this all together. Let's go to Abraham, because that's exactly where Paul went. Abraham, there's not a Jew in the world that doesn't love Abraham. Father of us all, they would say. Now, when God called Abraham, where was he? Where was he? Literally.
In Ur.
Ur, Chaldees. And what kind of people were in Ur of Chaldees?
Chaldeans, his family.
Yeah, but what kind of people, the culture overall? God followers?
No.
No. So he calls him out of his home, makes him a promise, and takes him from here to over here. Now, chapter 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22, 8 chapters are devoted to the life of Abraham. And when he gets to the land that God directed him, his name was still Abram. Abram means exalted father. Which was interesting. Because how many children did this exalted father have? Zippo.
At that time.
Yes, that's exactly the time I'm talking about. No children. And God brings him out of his tent and tells him to look where? And what does he see? And what does God tell him? Yeah, count them, Abraham. Or Abram, excuse me. Count them, Abram. Well, I can't. That's going to be your following. And now we get to one of the most important texts in the Bible. Genesis 15. Remember, we're not in chapter 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22. We're at the beginning of chapter 15. And so whoever has 15:6, would you read it?
And he believed in the Lord, and he accounted it to him for righteousness.
Wow. Was Abraham a Jew at this time? Yay or nay?
No.
He had not even been circumcised. And it was accounted to him as being righteous. How was it accounted to him? Why was it accounted to him? What did he do that God would say, "You're on my side"? Believed in what? Did he believe in circumcision?
No.
Didn't even know what it was. What did he believe?
He believed what God told him was true.
Are you positive? I love it when visitors come in. Are you positive?
Yes.
Absolutely.
He followed his action.
Oh, to the law. Everything. Right? Perfect. He's accounted righteous. God says, "You are one of my friends. We're in a relationship. You are righteous." And what happens to this righteous man in 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, and 21? First of all, they changed his name to Abraham. God says, "Now you'll become Abraham, father of the multitude." And he believed God so much that God was going to deliver an heir through him. What was the first thing he decided to do about that heir?
His handmaid.
No, before that. He says, "I've got it." Now remember, he believed God, right? Not picking on you, but I like you. Gave you a dollar, so there is no free lunch. So you're going to pay a price for that. In fact, you'll return that dollar pretty quick. See? She says that he believed God. And the very first thing he said was, paraphrasing, "God is incapable of helping himself, so I'm going to help him out, and I think my good friend Eliezer will be a perfect substitute father with Sarah for my heir." How much did he believe? Well, God said very gently, "Listen, Abraham, you're not listening to me. I said the offspring would come from your loins." Oh! Okay. Now, everybody in the village knew about this. Two old people going around saying, we're going to have a baby. And then Abraham and Sarah began thinking. Remember this guy that believed God? They got thinking. And what was the next one then, Roger, they came up with? Yeah, yeah, see, the baby's got to come from my loins. So Sarah says, well, I'm not going to have any kids. And Abraham says, yeah. The believer, yeah. Well, that Hagar pretty good looking. And we all know what happened from that one. But what did God say about Abraham in verse 6 of chapter 15? What was it again, Roger? He was righteous. Then they go down to Egypt.